Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert, one of the Tech Doctors, and along with me is Allison Hartley. Good evening, Allison.
Hi, I'm coming to you from a piece of history. Right now, I am on my fairly new Audio-Technica microphone, but I have it hooked up to a mid-2010 Mac Mini with an old 500 gig spinning hard drive and 2 gigabytes of RAM. So it's a wonder this thing's running at all. But I am back, at least on a Mac. I have plans to upgrade it. But yeah, it's kind of interesting, the adventures that I had getting this running. And that's kind of part of why we're here today, to talk a little bit about our adventures. I understand you have some follow-up from our podcast we did last week.
I do. I want to follow up a little bit on the Touch Bar MacBook, and I want to hear a bit more about your in the process of upgrading your Mac Mini there. You sound marvelous for being on a 2010 Mac Mini. So,
well, thank you. This little dinosaur's plodding along.
Yes, indeed. Sounding good. In terms of follow-up, for those of you who didn't tune in to the last one, we did an extensive review and pros and cons of the brand new MacBook Pro with a Touch Bar, which I'm personally really enjoying, and I'm enjoying it more and more as time goes by. I've decided that for me, I do kind of prefer the Touch Bar to the row of function keys. I do understand from a little bit of follow-up that there is some question about how well the Touch Bar will or won't work for low vision folks. And I talked a bit with Shelley Brisbane about that, and she doesn't have enough experience yet with a Touch Bar Mac to really comment, she said, but maybe after the first of the year, we can have her on to talk about low vision. And that's complicated because it seems like from what little bit I know about low vision, which honestly isn't a lot, having never had the pleasure of experiencing it, you know, it seems like it varies so much from person to person that the Touch Bar might work for one person's vision and not for another. So I just don't know what to say about that, but maybe she can help us with that later on.
Yeah, one size definitely never fits all in terms of vision. You could have two people with the exact same eye condition in terms of presenting symptoms, and even in terms of similar visual functioning, and depending on little differences in contrast preference, for example, their needs could be totally different in terms of any kind of low vision devices or enhancements that would need to be made in order for them to see something like the Touch Bar. I believe, and I may be wrong, but I believe that Michael Deweese from iAccessibility is low vision. And I want to say that I thought I saw on Twitter, scrolling by, some information from a low vision perspective on the Touch Bar. If you're at all curious, you might want to check that out. And I don't know, I think Alex Hall, he did a really great review of the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar on AppleVis. I believe he's low vision, but I believe he is primarily still a voiceover user. So there may or may not be some information in there.
Well, that's good information to have, and we've had Michael and Alex on this podcast before, and so perhaps
we could
have them back as well, especially if they can give us something from the low vision perspective. And I did want to follow up on another thing about the Touch Bar MacBook. There's been a pretty persistent rumor that I've seen a few places, which turns out to be true, unfortunately, that if you need to start up the Touch Bar MacBook in the recovery partition by holding down Command R when you start the machine, there doesn't appear to be at this point a way to turn VoiceOver on once you get into the recovery partition. The standard VoiceOver command on this machine, which is Command plus the Touch ID key 3 times, doesn't seem to work. I talked with someone in Apple Tech support about this, and she verified that, yeah, she's had to try it with a couple of customers and was unable to get VoiceOver to come on. So I've submitted a bug report to Apple, and I'm really hopeful that they will give us a hotkey that can address this issue. I'm confident that they will, but this is a real problem because sometimes we do need to boot up into the recovery partition to do various things. So that's an unfortunate side effect that we're dealing with right now. I don't know whether you had heard about that or not.
I had, and I did hear, and I know this is less than ideal, but at least it will get VoiceOver running. I'd heard that if you hooked up an external keyboard that you could do the regular Command F5 and get it running that way.
I may try that here just to see how it works. We do have one of the Apple extended keyboards that's plugged into this iMac across the office here. And so that would be one way to do it. That's a good workaround. And interestingly enough, I was talking with a very nice, vibrant woman named Tiffany in Apple Accessibility, and we were talking about this issue, and she also submitted a report. After we got off the phone, I was busily doing my Pilates exercise routine, and she called me back. And she said that she just wanted to tell me that she had been on the phone with a customer dealing with the issue that we've seen now in iOS 10.2, which is that there's been a problem pairing the Focus Blue displays with iOS devices. But she was able to discover that if you enter four zeros, the pairing code 0000, that the Focus Blue will indeed pair with the iOS devices. So, I did want to pass that along for anyone who may be struggling with that issue. Apparently, there is a way to do it. And you reminded me of the workaround with a USB keyboard for the other issue. So I think this is kind of a win-win. It's not the way we want it, but at least we've talked it through enough to have a couple reasonable workarounds here. So that's cool.
Yep.
In addition to that follow-up, we did get an email from a user whose name is Chris Wright, and he reminded me, which I had either not known or just forgotten about, that you can indeed do a one-finger single flick on the touch bar and flick through the items on the touch bar. And I think you were kind of alluding to that in the podcast.
Yeah.
And I was saying, no, you just do explore by touch. You slide along the touch bar, which is all I had discovered at that point. Mm-hmm. But Chris did point out that you can indeed do the one-finger click. I personally think 95% of the time, unless you're just simply wanting to explore to see what's there, the explore by touch is the better option with the touch bar, because once you slide to what you want, you can just double tap on it and you're right there.
Right.
I will say that with the latest release of Sierra, the touch bar is working better with VoiceOver than it was when we did the original podcast. I was having a problem where sometimes I would double tap and hold on the volume slider, but when I would slide, the system volume wouldn't change. That problem appears to be gone in the latest version of Sierra. So I just wanted to follow up on those things.
Oh, excellent.
The final thing that Chris was asking about in his email, which I do not have an answer to, and I don't know whether you've heard one way or another, but he was wanting to know if you're running Windows on the Touch Bar computer, does the Windows screen reader respond to the Touch Bar? And I do not know. I have no idea about that because I don't have Windows on my machine.
Honestly, I haven't really been paying attention to the trials and travails of the Bootcamp or Fusion users of the Touch Bar MacBook Pro, because when I get mine, I don't intend to install Windows on it. So I'm sorry, I don't know either.
Yeah, I just don't know. And so rather than guess and guess wrongly, I'll just say sorry, but neither of us have an answer to that question because neither of us use Windows on our Macs these days. So hopefully someone else will be able to provide that answer as time goes by. The final thing I wanted to talk a little bit about in this brief podcast is just because there may be people getting new Macs for the holidays or sooner than later, I want to talk a little bit about my experience with setting up a new Mac. But maybe before I jump into what I did, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about what you have done with this pretty cool 2010 Mac Mini so far.
Sure. So what I've done so far is, I know that this is going to be just a hold me over machine until I can get the Touch Bar MacBook Pro. When I get the Touch Bar MacBook Pro, I fully intend to set it up as a new machine. But what I did for this machine, I think it was running El Cap or maybe even Yosemite. So I just made myself using a piece of software called Install Disk Creator. I booted into my clone that I had made of Sierra before I lost my functioning on my MacBook Pro, thank goodness. I used the Install Disk Creator to make a bootable installation of Sierra on a 8-gig thumb drive. I installed a clean copy of Sierra then onto this Mac Mini, and then I did use the Migration Assistant to just copy all of my stuff over so that I could quickly be up and running with my system. It went pretty well. I had to abort the Migration Assistant and restart the computer and start over. And then the second time, the Migration Assistant worked as it should. There have been a few things I had to re-log into Dropbox, and that downloading of all my files didn't take as long as I thought it would, considering that this is running the best Wi-Fi that it supports is 802.11n, I believe. It doesn't have AC support. But it's all run pretty well. It's a little slow because, as I say, it's still got the spinning hard drive and very little RAM. I fully intend to get an SSD put in this machine and an 8-gig RAM upgrade so that when I do get my Touch Bar MacBook Pro, I'll be able to give Jeremy back a better machine than the one he gave me, so that it'll be kind of an upgrade for both of us in that way.
Well, you are being a good partner and a good citizen there.
I am. I tell you.
I think that's fantastic.
The things we do for love.
Yes. Or for Mac.
Right.
Well, you're inspiring me here. Now I think I'll pull out my old 2009 MacBook Pro and boot it up and see how it works.
Yeah. It's going to be slow. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I had to switch from Karen Full to Compact Alex because I found that Full Karen was stuttering too much when I tried to do anything.
Uh-huh.
And Compact Alex isn't too bad, actually.
Well, good. And actually, it's amazing to me that you're running Sierra with 2 gigs of RAM. I mean, that's the minimum that Apple says you need. But wow, that is really squeaking by, I would think.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of this and that busy and ready, and it's not a quick process, but it works for now. And hopefully this individual who's going to help me get my SSD and my RAM sorted will get back to me this week, and at least it will run a bit faster.
If not, I think on Christmas Eve, when a lot of people are putting together toys for their kids, you should just pull out that screwdriver and rip the cover off that thing and fix it up.
Because I'm sure that will go really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's better to wait for the guy who's going to help you with it, huh? I think that's what I would do.
I have extreme confidence when it comes to really anything on the software side of the Mac. But when it comes to replacing hardware, it's just too easy to break things.
I think. Yeah, I think you're right. That's the reason I've left the cover on my new MacBook Pro so far.
Well, your MacBook Pro isn't upgradable.
That's right. That's right, but you could just take it off and poke around in there a bit, you know.
That's true.
See what's in there.
Adventurous.
I'm not going to do that. So my experience was moving from a 2012 MacBook Pro. I have the first Retina MacBook Pro, and it was running Sierra, so the software on it was all up to date. But I didn't want to do Migration Assistant on a brand new machine. I'm just fussy that way, I guess. So what I did was I had a super duper clone of my 2012 MacBook. So I just started it up as a new machine. All I did was lift the lid and wait a couple minutes, and VoiceOver started talking to me. And so I went through the setup that you go through when you have a brand new Mac, where you have to log into your Wi-Fi and log into your Apple ID and do several things like that. And then I went ahead and set up a user account with exactly the same name and password that I use on my 2012 machine. I've discovered that you can avoid a lot of problems that way if you just keep those things the same, because then when you get the machine running at the Finder, you just open the drive where the clone is running and go down to your user folder. And then it's really easy just to copy all of your documents all of your music, those various folders that are on the Mac by default can just be copied over using a cut and paste on the clipboard to the new Mac. And so it really didn't take me very long to do that, especially with the fact that a lot of what I had was either, as you said, in Dropbox or stored on iCloud Drive. And so it didn't take long to get that stuff back up and running. Then I went through the arduous task, which for me at least took a weekend, of going through and methodically installing all my apps. And I had all of my apps that weren't bought through the App Store. I had copies of either the DMG files or the installation files, or I actually for the most part went and downloaded new versions from the websites where the apps are sold, just because I wanted to make sure I was installing the very latest versions. And so I installed and configured those apps by hand. Fortunately, I use 1Password, where I have all my software license keys stored, so it was very easy to just paste license keys into the correct spot on the new applications. It took a long time, honestly. I could have done it faster if I hadn't been so fussy about going through each application and setting the preferences and making sure that I had everything pretty much the way I wanted it. But that process went really smoothly for me. And it's honestly what I do every 4 or 5 years when I get a new Mac. And I always dread it, the thought of it, doing it every time. But after I've done it, 2 weeks later, as it is now, I'm glad I did, because things are just running really well at this point. So I don't know whether that sounds way too radical to you, but that's the approach I chose this time.
Well, the 1Password bit doesn't sound so bad. What I'm really not looking forward to is all of my voiceover settings and all of the various system preferences that I have configured kind of just so.
As far as voiceover goes, you can export all of your voiceover settings.
Oh, yes, right.
To a file, and then you can just import that file on the new machine, and you'll quickly have all your voiceover settings. You won't have necessarily all of the extra voices that you've downloaded. You'll probably have to re-download those. But
that's not a big deal.
Not a big deal. But it's easy with voiceover, with all of the system preferences, and not so much. If you go the way I did, although I've really discovered honestly that in terms of just the general system preferences, I have not changed all that many defaults. A few. But it doesn't, that didn't turn out to be as big a deal for me as I was afraid it might.
And even with the voiceover stuff, I kind of feel like going through and making all those changes is a good way to learn about what might be new.
Yeah.
So maybe I will just do a complete. Yeah, I'm thinking, I'm already kind of dreading it, and I haven't even bought the Mac yet.
But. Yeah, we'll see. It's not fun, but honestly, it's still, to me, it is smoother and easier to even do this clean installation from scratch, or nuke and pave, as people sometimes call it, on the Mac than it ever was for me on Windows. And so at least I have that to be happy about. And I don't do it that often, but there, like you did on your machine, if you have a recent backup, you can try Migration Assistant. I am not really big on it these days, but you had success with it, and I think a lot of people do. And the good news is, honestly, you can always try the less invasive approach first, like Migration Assistant or some other way of an automated approach to setting stuff up. And then if that doesn't work as well as you wanted it to, or you find your machine's not performing as well, you can always go back and do the start from scratch later on.
That's true. I may do that.
I am really happy to say that after a little over 2 weeks with this computer, it has settled down very nicely. And
good.
The 16 gigs of RAM and the extra fast SSD just makes a huge difference, as well as I think my 2012 MacBook Pro only supported USB 2, and USB 3 is a lot faster. So I'm finding that my backups, things that I'd copy from a USB hard drive, go much, much faster on this machine.
Oh, excellent.
I had the good fortune of listening to the latest holiday gift guide from Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices podcast, and Joe Kissel was on there, who's written a number of books on the Mac for Take Control. He talked about this new USB thumb drive from Kingston, which has both a USB-A and a USB-C connection on it. So I bought one of these Kingston thumb drives, and I got it really fast, just in a couple of days from Amazon. And it's a tiny little thing, so you have to be careful not to lose it, but it really works great. I bought the 64 gig USB drive for $23. So it's hard to beat that.
Yeah, that's really good.
And I, you know, plugged it into both USB-A and USB-C, and it works fine on both. So,
oh, very cool.
Makes it very handy if you need to transfer things to and from this new MacBook Pro to one of the older machines. Or in my case, I'm always transferring stuff between my BrailleSense and the MacBook. So that makes it really handy.
Oh, nice.
So I just wanted to do this brief update, and I thank you for sharing about the Mac Mini. I think that's kind of cool that you're working through that, and it's going to be neat to see how much difference it makes once you get that extra RAM and that hopefully much faster SSD in there.
I think it's going to feel, in a lot of ways, like a new machine.
Yeah, I think it is too, and it's going to be fun to talk to you about it and see just how much difference you notice. It's going to be a lot, I'll guarantee you, because Sierra can barely be chugging along on that 2 gigs of RAM. I'm just amazed that it's working as well as it is, honestly.
Yeah, Skype's holding up, so that's something.
Yes, Skype has held up for us here. Well, I don't want to hold you, Allison. Thanks for hanging in here with me with all this, and I'm glad we were able to do this one and get it out before the holidays. Those of you who listen to this before the break, hope you have a good holiday break, and I hope you do as well, Allison.
Oh, thanks. You too, Robert, and all of you out there in listener land as well. Have happy holidays.
Yes, indeed, and I don't imagine we'll be back until after the first of the year, because we're going to take a holiday break ourselves.
Yeah.
So, until next time, this is Robert, one of the tech doctors, saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley, the other tech doctor, saying bye, everyone.